Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Mayor Bill Peduto to the broadcast. Mayor Peduto is the 60th mayor of Pittsburgh, a position he's held since 2014. While in office, he's been an advocate of ride-sharing transportation throughout the city, most notably being Uber's recent pilot autonomous car program. Through his time as an elected official and a resident, Mayor Peduto has been able to see Pittsburgh transform into a city literally driven by technology. Prior to being elected a city executive, Mayor Peduto served as a member of the Pittsburgh City Council, where he chaired the Committee on General Services, Technology, and the Arts. He also oversaw the City Information Systems Department, the Cable Bureau, and the Art Commission on Council during this time on the City Council. Mayor Peduto earned a bachelor's degree in political science from Penn State University and a master's degree in public policy and management from the University of Pittsburgh. I recently caught up with Mayor Peduto over the phone from City Hall in Pittsburgh, and our conversation covered world-class IT principle 4, IT and business partnerships, as we discussed how the City of Pittsburgh forms strategic partnerships with technology leaders, and principle 5, external partnerships, as we discussed how partnerships between municipal, educational, and private organizations facilitate innovation and growth moving forward. We also discussed how Pittsburgh has used technology to correct an economic downturn over the past few decades, as well as a variety of other topics. This is Peter High. Please consider reading my new book, Implementing World-Class IT Strategy, How IT Can Drive Organizational Innovation. The book covers topics such as the CIO as strategic facilitator, the development of IT missions, facilitating corporate and divisional strategy, the development of IT's own strategic plans, the development of enterprise architecture, reviewing, refreshing, and communicating strategy, and several other topics, all told with stories from leading CIOs from a variety of major corporations. You can find it at Amazon.com, my publisher's website, Wiley.com, and at your better bookstores. Thank you very much. Mayor Peduto, thank you so much for joining me. It's a pleasure to speak with you. I thought we would begin with, you know, in September of this year, there was quite a splash made when Uber began its pilot to driverless car initiative in Pittsburgh. I'd be curious, actually, just to begin there, if you don't mind, how has it gone so far and what are the plans for the foreseeable future?
Well, it's really about 2 years in the making. The Uber team came to Pittsburgh with the intent to kick the tires to see if Pittsburgh could become a global center for their autonomous vehicle research and development. And what they were looking for wasn't government money or wasn't any type of subsidy, but what they were looking for was a partner who was willing to create an urban lab. We had had a couple decades of experience of working with Carnegie Mellon on autonomous vehicles in the city and actually had CMU's cars already on our streets. So it wasn't a big leap for us to be able to accommodate Uber. Over the course of the past year and a half, they've employed over 600 employees in the city, and I expect that number to be over 1,000 by the end of next year. And they're committed to spending up to $1 billion of investment within the city. There have been, on almost any time of the day, numerous occasions of seeing the vehicles downtown within prescribed areas of the city, that I expect that over the course of the next few years, that geographical footprint will be expanding as well.
Can I ask you, there are a lot of people who are pontificating as to how quickly driverless cars, generally speaking, will become a reality. And as someone who has fostered a testing lab of sorts within Pittsburgh, I wonder how this has informed your thoughts about how rapidly this might take off more generally for the general public.
I think if you asked anybody 2 years ago, do you anticipate driverless cars on the streets of an American city in the next 20 months, there have been very few people who would have thought that that was reality. The technology has been there for over a decade. It's just that the culture has not. So we could have driverless planes. The technology exists, but the moment that somebody would walk into a plane and there wouldn't be a pilot in the cabin, they'd walk off the plane. I don't think that the culture has caught up to the technology yet. I think that as you start to watch the way that the major automobile manufacturers are promoting their new lines of vehicles, they're doing it through more and more autonomous technology. And I think that within the next 5 years, you'll be seeing a streamlining of different functions of the car, which will contain autonomous ability. What will be the interesting component of it is that the sensors that will be utilized and already are utilized will allow the cars to talk to each other. And it's not simply having an autonomous vehicle, but a series of vehicles that know exactly how far away to stay from each other, can anticipate what a car three cars ahead is doing and how to react to it before the human eye can even catch it. And then building that network into the public right of way with sensor detectors and cameras that have the ability to collect all of this data and make our roads much more safe and efficient. We're already going to be rolling out the next phase of the smartest traffic signals in the world. Partnership with Carnegie Mellon over a system called SureTrack allows us to capture information in real time and through a network of traffic signals, change the timing of the green lights and the red lights to increase efficiency by 31%. You don't have to add a new turning lane or build another roadway. You can use the existing roadways that you have, and through automation and sensors, be able to make the system much more efficient and safe for bicyclists and pedestrians as well.
You've mentioned Carnegie Mellon for good reason a couple of times and in a couple of different contexts already. And I'm curious, as a leader of a major U.S. city, how do you see the lessons of the partnership between city government, academia, and private business working together? It sounds like you've got a good recipe in a couple of different instances. I'd love to also talk about the INP relationship and the development of the inclusive innovation roadmap. But maybe before we get there, more generally speaking, how do you see that partnership, the three legs of that stool, working together and each adding an element that the others don't have?
Well, I think that it's a strategic partnership that you're going to see happening much more. The city of Pittsburgh was the first city to enter into a memorandum of understanding with a university in the country. So we literally signed an agreement with Carnegie Mellon back in 2014 that allows us to utilize that university as our R&D department and for them to utilize the city as their urban lab. So they were looking for ways to be able to test products and then potentially take products to market. So there was a combination between Carnegie Mellon University, the city of Pittsburgh, and the Hillman Foundation, which was investing in looking at long-term opportunities through CMU's research to be able to create industries in Pittsburgh. And we've definitely seen that happen in robotics. We're now seeing it take off in sensors and automation for transportation, but it has the potential to go in many different directions. From that, we were invited to the White House to present the idea to other cities with major research institutions that they partner with. And from that meeting, we created Metro Lab, which is a partnership of over 20 cities and research institutions, mainly universities, that partner together and then partner between each other. So as we look to solve our combined sewer overflow program, we're looking at the partnership that South Bend and Notre Dame have created in using sensor detection and shutoff valves in order to be able to lessen the cost of building out an entirely new system. And it continues throughout a number of different areas. And like I said, over 20 cities. Metro Lab is housed at Carnegie Mellon right now through a foundation grant. And hopefully it will be something that the next administration will also get behind.
Very interesting. I know that PGH Lab, is that Pittsburgh's version of Metro Lab? But I know that's an initiative that your Chief Innovation and Performance Officer announced the formation of earlier this year.
Yeah, no, Pittsburgh Lab is a way to partner with the smaller startups. What about the person that has an idea for creating an app that will remind you whether it's recycling week, or an app that will help you find a parking space, or So what we do is we say the type of things that we're looking for, then we look for young entrepreneurs and startup companies to partner with us. At this point, we're not offering any financial incentive to do it, but we are offering them a platform to be able to create a new company and to utilize technology to be able to make people's lives a little bit easier. It's just an opening of the doors of city government. City government usually is a closed system of contracts and Byzantine rules that sort of pushes out entrepreneurial thought. And it really comes down to the basics. The government is very risk averse and entrepreneurs are the opposite. So if you can open up the doors and say, hey, if you have some ideas, we're willing to share with you the data to make it happen, platforms to make it happen, and actually give you a city that will partner, and then you can take your product around to the rest of the country. Well, we're interested in trying to find some companies to partner in that way.
That's excellent. I mentioned earlier the inclusive innovation roadmap. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, it goes across many different areas. I mean, cities have been working for years to bridge the digital divide and to be able to provide broadband and access to internet. And that is a core function of what the roadmap looks to do. But it also, you know, looks in areas where access has been problematic. So in our senior centers, it's not simply having a computer where seniors can play online poker. It's a way for them to be able to understand and to be taught all of the different things that are out there and how they can access it. We recently started a new online program at one of our senior centers, and about 15 people signed up. I went to see them and I asked to show a hand how many people. This is the first day that you've been online, and all 15 raised their hand.
Wow.
It opens the lines of opportunity through programs like Pittsburgh Lab to be able to get citizens more directly involved in city government and giving them an opportunity through city government to be able to create technology opportunities for everybody. It's one of our largest, country's largest open data portals that combines the city and the county's information with Carnegie Mellon and the University of Pittsburgh to be able to pull it together and to make it useful information. And then the foundation community to make sure that it remains relevant and up to date, and basically providing the raw data to those that can utilize it and understand code, and the useful information about your neighborhood or about anything you may be interested in that's public information to those that are looking for data sets of information. And it also looks into how we can become better partners through not only technology, but the green technology and sustainability. So it has a lot of different parts to it. It's an ongoing document that has a punch list that will probably last for more than a decade, but it has very tangible and very real goals and expectations.
That's excellent. The renaissance of the city of Pittsburgh is in many ways tied to technology, in many ways that we've already described. But I'm curious, as you think about this evolution, what sort of data do you monitor to gauge whether or not this is successful, whether things are progressing in the way that you would hope?
Well, you look at everything. I mean, you look at the number of building permits that are being issued in the city, and then you look at how long it takes to get a building permit approved. You look at the amount of revenue coming in through the payroll tax, and then you look to see the disparity between neighborhoods and where poverty rates are and where they're going up and where they're continuing to go down. It's a constant monitoring of every bit of information that you can imagine. And there really isn't a systematic way of being able to pull it completely together. In many ways, it's an organic exercise that is as much an art as it is a science. Pittsburgh's change in the economy really started back when the economy died. So in 1979, the Pirates won the World Series, the Steelers won the Super Bowl, and the city of Pittsburgh died. The economy tanked. We had, by 1983, unemployment at 19%. Our debt ratio higher than New York City's when they went bankrupt. and through the 80s, we lost more people who never returned than New Orleans lost after Katrina. We literally went through a depression. But in 1979, Carnegie Mellon also created the first robotics program in the world. A few years later, Pittsburgh was one of the few cities that was creating a supercomputing center. And during the 80s and the early 90s, when every politician was saying how they were going to bring the mills back, there were people in Pittsburgh who were building out an entirely new economy based upon technology and education, and they were becoming the fourth largest grant recipient of NIH funding and turning a small University of Pittsburgh Medical Center into the largest employer in the state of Pennsylvania. So the transformation of the city from a city of heavy industry to eds, meds, tech, and finance took 30 years to get to. But it was the early days of the 1980s with people thinking about what could be and planting the seeds that were the reason that was able to happen.
It's so interesting, the contrast. People are so, for good reason in many cases, cynical about what's happening in Washington with the gridlock and the divisions between the parties and so on. It's really reassuring in many ways to hear stories of good work being done within city governments that are really making a difference in pretty dramatic ways, as you describe.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say that it happened within the halls or is happening within the halls of City Hall. I think that it's the partnerships between the different levels of government, city, county, state, federal. It's the partnerships with the corporate community, the nonprofit community, and the foundation community. And it's sort of an understanding in Pittsburgh that we really do believe that if we work together, we can do anything. And it's been proven. A city that had triple the unemployment that Detroit is facing today is able to come back in such a way that it has become a global leader in innovation, where companies like Microsoft and Apple and Google and Uber and Tata and Bosch and Oculus and Disney all call home. It is probably off the radar of many, but to those that are looking for innovation and the ability to have basically a cross-sectional technology opportunity, Pittsburgh's on the very, very short list globally.
And you add to that the cost of living differences of a place like Pittsburgh relative to Silicon Valley, for instance, and there's some pretty enormous advantages that you have.
You can still buy a 3-bedroom home for $200,000 in Pittsburgh. And people think that that's expensive in Pittsburgh.
Right, exactly. Well, Mayor Peduto, thank you so much for a great conversation and describing a bit about the renaissance that your city has had, as well as the role that technology has played in it.
Yeah, it's been the central theme throughout three decades. And if you go back and you look at people like Dick Seyert, who is the president of Carnegie Mellon University, and you read about Herb Simon, who was working on artificial intelligence really at the same time that the term and technology were being coined, you can really see the pathway of how Pittsburgh got here. It wasn't an overnight success. It was 30 years of work.
But it also now lays the work. It is an example for others, though not a light switch to turn on, obviously. As you point out, it's an evolution, but now a model for other cities to follow.
Yeah, and I'll give you the one example when I talk about the cross-sectional technology that's happening here. You know, you have University of Pittsburgh and the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center that are leaders in medical engineering and technology. And then you have Carnegie Mellon that is a leader in robotics. And then you have people who sort of met, because Pittsburgh's a small town, and started thinking, could we create a micro robot that would walk on a heart during open heart surgery and be able to monitor? And the ability for both of those to come together in a city that is known for building things becomes reality. So Silicon Valley can create it, they can research it, but really the ability to bring that cross-sectional and to build it, Pittsburgh is perfectly poised for that. And in fact, Carnegie Mellon partners with our sheet metal workers, so because so much of the work that's being done requires the expertise of professionally trained metal workers to be able to help them with the projects with robotics. There's a robotics company that's leading a mission to create a mission to the moon, and 90% of all the products in it have been produced locally. So we can not only dream it, we can make it. And that's what makes us a little bit different as well.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to Meta Strategies' five principles of World Class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.